Hello, friends. This is Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting today from the studios of KKNW here in beautiful Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle on 1150 AM. I want to thank everyone so much for their beautiful love and support and for making Out of This World Radio one of the most popular metaphysical and spiritual radio shows in the Seattle area, and with over 250,000 listeners in over 90 countries. The purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and make this world a much better and happier place. And I know that with everyone's help, we can and will make this earth a better place. On today's show, from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m., I'll be interviewing my good friend Simon Parks from England in a pre-recorded interview I did from Peru last week. During the second hour, from 3:15 to 3:30, I'll be talking about my trip into the Hollow Earth in Agartha at a stargate called Amaramuro at Lake Titicaca in Peru. I visited Amaramuro several weeks ago, and while I was there, we were greeted by the singing of a chorus of children from Agartha and the Hollow Earth. The rocks of the Stargate then became like jello, and we were literally able to see into the Hollow Earth. We'll be going back to Amaramuro and Lake Titicaca in Peru from May 17th to June 4th, and we plan to camp at the Amaramuro Stargate and enter into Agartha and the Hollow Earth. If you'd like to go and enter into Agartha and the Hollow Earth, please let me know. The cost is just $4.97 per person with accommodation and airfare extra, and I know it'll be an amazing trip. Then later on, during the second hour, from 3:30 to 4, I'll be interviewing a fantastic and very interesting Inca shaman named Nicolas Pacar Casino from the Cusco, Peru area of South America. Nicolas practices ancient healing techniques handed down many generations going back to ancient times. His tribe hid from the Spanish when they came to Peru in the 1530s, and they didn't come out of hiding until 1947, believe it or not, when they came out to the Western world. He says Western society is disconnected from nature, and we need to get connected back to Mother Earth if we are to survive. He's a fascinating man who has many messages for humanity on how we can make this Earth a much better and happier place, and I hope you can listen. I wanted to wish everyone a beautiful, happy Valentine's Day today. I'll be giving some messages from my good friend Albert Einstein on the power of love and Valentine's Day at 3 p.m. today in about an hour. I'd like to thank the many sponsors of this show, especially Corey and Saul and Kirkland, for their wonderful support. I especially want to thank them for their generous contribution for a new library for the Hopi Indians in Arizona, as well as Minondi Lombardi for his wonderful support of the new Hopi Library. I'd also like to thank my wonderful friends Mary and Elias in Costa Rica, Bradley and Jim in London, England, Jen, Eric, and Emma Louise in Norway, and everyone around the world who've helped me raise consciousness and make this world a better place. We're also looking for additional sponsors and advertisers. Any advertising on the show will have a worldwide audience for your goods and services. With that, I'd like to thank my dear friend Carol, who designs my website and provides wonderful support, my friends in the Galactic Alliance who've been supporting my show, my angelic and earthly family, and of course KKNW, without whose help and support this program would not be possible. I also have a spiritual mentoring program where I teach people how to contact their angels and spirit guides. If you'd like to get in touch with your loved ones who've passed on, please email me at outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. This month in February, I'm also giving discounts on my readings for only $50 for a full one-hour reading. If you'd like a reading, please email me at outofthisworld1150@gmail.com, or you can call me here in the United States at 509-750-9793. In addition, if you order a copy of my book, Messages from the Masters, with messages from Albert Einstein and John F. Kennedy, you'll get a free brief reading along with that as well. The book is just $20. And if you're interested, please just send me an email. Finally, I wanted to remind everyone of my Galactic Wisdom Conference, which is next month on March 13th, 14th, and 15th. Among the speakers will be Simon Parks from England, James Redfield, the author of The Celestine Prophecy, Michiko Hayashi of the wonderful Emoto Peace Project, and many others. If you'd like to register, please go to my website at www.galacticwisdomconference.com. I'm also going back to Mount Shasta twice this year, from July 1st to the 8th, as well as August 27th to September 3rd. If you'd like to go, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. I'd like to now play this amazing interview I did with my good friend Simon Parks in England a few days ago when I was in Peru. I hope you enjoy it. Hello, friends. I'm in Paracas, a beautiful city called Paracas, Peru, on the coast of Peru here. And I'm with my tour group here. We've had such a wonderful time here in Peru. And Simon, through the miracle of technology and Skype, is on the line now. We're going to be doing a pre-record for my next radio show. Simon, how are you doing today?
Very well, thank you, Ted. It's wonderful to be able to talk to you and your group in what is really a very spiritual location. That's the thing with you, Ted. You always choose these rather exotic but spiritual places to travel to.
Well, I believe in having fun in life, and so anyway, and it's been amazing, really. I know you've been busy today. I sent you pictures of the Stargate that we went to at the southern end of Lake Titicaca, called Amaromuru. And when we walked up to the Stargate, Simon, we could literally hear a whole chorus of young children and adults singing to us. Most beautiful vocals and music. But
wow.
we kept thinking that we would see a whole bunch of people walking out from behind this big rock, and nobody showed up. And we realized after about a half hour that they were in another dimension and they'd come from the hollow earth. And while we were there, Tom, tell Simon what happened when you put your hands on the rock.
Well, it was an unusual experience. It was very new to me, this whole situation, because as we approached the rock, there was really no one else there. It was near dusk. You know, our driver had brought us there, and suddenly we heard the singing, and it seemed almost as if there was someone, you know, maybe 15, 20 feet away, but we had actually walked around, you know, the perimeter there, and there was no one there. So that was quite... It was a different experience, but the gate itself, or the entrance on the face of the stone itself, when I placed both hands on that and closed my eyes, it began to actually, the stone became transparent, which was very unusual. I could see the veins inside the rock, the way the rock was formed. And, you know, it just for a few moments, because I was kind of startled by that, but I was surprised that I would have such a, you know, intense experience. Not really being initiated to, whole Stargate concept is rather new for me.
Yeah, several people, Simon, we put our hands on the rocks around this Stargate, and the rocks started moving, and it felt like jelly. And then I got the message: if we were to had stayed there that night, we likely would have walked into the hollow earth, but. We had to get back. There was a rainstorm coming. But when I go back in May, I'm going to plan at least one or maybe two nights there camping out at the Stargate.
Well, it got dark and we weren't able to really stay any longer. Our driver, you know, really, he hadn't anticipated that kind of experience. And as it became dark, it was clearly, you know, dark. It was way out in the country of southern Peru, very close to the Bolivian border.
And, you know, Simon, you're welcome to come anytime you like with me. I'll be going next at the end of May.
It would require me moving to America, so we'll have to see what happens, eh, Ted?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely, Simon. Absolutely, absolutely. Well, my goodness, there's all kinds of things going on. Brexit happened a couple days ago when we were traveling here in Peru, and then President Trump, of course, gave his State of the Union address, and Nancy Pelosi basically ripped up the speech that he was given. And all kinds of things are going. The coronavirus is happening in China. Some say it's genetically engineered to create havoc and help harm people across the planet. I'll let you choose. I got a whole bunch of things to talk about today, Simon, but I'll let you start off the program with whatever you'd like to talk about.
Okay, well, that's very kind of you. You mentioned about the State of the Union address. Of course, President Trump had hoped to have been acquitted by then, but the Democrats managed to drag it out. The ripping up of the speech has been misunderstood and misinterpreted. Most commentators think that the House Speaker ripped up the speech because she was sort of cross. The reality is that ever since, I would say, that a couple of years, what the Republicans have done is given the speech beforehand to their opponents, but then President Trump has talked about something completely different that wasn't on the speech.
Sure.
So they got to a point now where by ripping up the speech, what she's saying is encoded messages, I'm not going to get caught like that again. So it wasn't that she was ripping up his speech because she was ripping up his words. She was doing it because she was sending a signal to the Republicans, I don't believe, you know, what you're doing now. So that was that. We don't doubt that President Trump will be acquitted. What's more interesting is the caucus in Iowa. The result looks like Bernie Sanders or the new guy might just, you know, get more delegates, more votes. Mm-hmm. than we thought Joe Biden. So mm-hmm. that is quite interesting. Mm-hmm. Now, that's one thing aside. Let's look at the coronavirus.
Sure.
I did a week ago put on the website that I posted something like, I don't know, 45 pages of the patent, which showed that the United States held the patent on the coronavirus. Some people thinking it's Canada. The difficulty, the confusion here is that Serco, the company which has offices in Canada, is sort of managing that. So it is a US held patent on the coronavirus. That, I think, tells us everything that we clearly understand. I think that the death rate is much higher than is being let on. You know, the Chinese bust in 350,000 nurses and doctors from all over China. Now, the alleged death figures are giving us about 500 people dead. You wouldn't bust in over 250,000 medical staff. So, and they built 2 field hospitals in 10 days flat. Wow. Now, that tells us that the situation there is far more serious than they are letting on. I don't think the Western world is lying. I think that the information that has been given out is less. If you can hear bangs and crashes in the background, that's the white cat, which has just decided that he wants to pull down everything that I'd so neatly stacked up. So that's a pretty tricky situation. What were the other topics that you thought might be of interest to your audience?
Well, I know this is probably off track a little bit, but I'm getting a psychic message from your white cat saying that that really would need some help, would like to get some help on finding mice. If you could maybe go on all fours with the kitty cat tomorrow and help, you know, help them find some little morsels to eat, that would be great. But anyway, I'm getting that from your cat. So anyway, that's why acting.
Okay. So. Well, they're house cats, so I suppose I'll have to open another little bag of treats.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I'm getting. You can bribe the kitty cat with treats, and I'm sure that the cat will calm down. down then. So. I've gotten a lot of emails from listeners around the world saying that all kinds of conspiracy theories about where the coronavirus came from and how it was allegedly patented by Bill Gates and the Rockefeller Foundation, they also say in the same breath, in the same email, that they also have the vaccinations for it, too. Do you think this is a way for population control? I mean, why this virus and why now in China, you think?
No, I don't think this one is about population control at all. That's mm-hmm. not what this is about.
Okay.
I know it can seem that way. The point is that the greatest threat to the United States of America in 2020 is not Russia, it's China. Not because Chinese tanks are going to come crashing across, sure. but simply because of the control of the economy. And the best way to fundamentally damage a country's economy is to put it into lockdown because of a virus. The latest news is that Hong Kong, which is part of China but is ruled by British laws, although it does belong to China, have actually closed their borders with China. Now that's a big step.
Wow.
So that's what we're going to see. We're going to see countries absolutely sealing the border, and this will have a huge detrimental effect on the Chinese economy. So this time next year, when the Chinese report their annual turnover, they will have taken a significant hit. So I don't think it's about a reduction of people. I think it's a political weapon to weaken the economy of China.
I see. Okay. Well, as always, you always give a very interesting and unique perspective on things, Simon. And thanks so much for sharing that. There were two more things on your website I'd love to go over briefly with respect to the virus. The U.S. Embassy staff has been evacuated from the worst-hit region in China, and they're going to spend 2 weeks in an aircraft hangar before being allowed out. And the second thing is that Australia is putting its evacuees on Christmas Island, 1,200 miles off the coast of the mainland. Is that still going on now? They're still containing people?
No, the Americans in the end moved them to a hotel.
Okay, all right.
I'll call it a hotel. It's on a military base. Mm-hmm. They've been moved to a military base because they didn't fancy staying in a hangar. But the Christmas Island one is, yes, they're on Christmas Island. Countries are absolutely taking no chances whatsoever, which, again, doesn't match what we're being told. We're being told this is no worse than the ordinary flu. But right. If it's no worse than the ordinary flu, why are countries putting their people into isolation? Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense. If you have a flu and you go to work, your boss says to you, you should go home. It doesn't call up the military or the health authority and say, turn up big suits on, put this person in a glass box and wheel them out of here. So we know we're not being given the truth. And I think that the truth is that the death rate is far greater than we're being told.
Okay.
And I think governments know this, Ted. Mm-hmm. But what good will it do if they tell them? See, if they tell everyone in America or Britain, there's nothing anyone can do, and it will only create panic. So what the government's doing is saying, well, we're just going to sit on this. We don't want to cause panic.
Right, right. Well, that I can understand. There was another post in your website, too, saying that only American citizens will be allowed back into the U.S. if they visited China, and that no other nation's citizens will be allowed to board a plane if they visited China. As the U.S. declares a public health emergency. Is that still in effect?
Yes, what's happening is that they're not turning them off when they reach in the U.S. The charter or the airline is telling them at their own country of departure, there's no point in you getting on the airplane because you'll only be turned back by the United States. So America is only accepting its own nationals who've been to China.
Oh, how interesting. This is a first. How about for Canada? Is Canada enacting the same kind of regulations for their citizens?
I haven't had information from Canada. I haven't. Yeah. I only know from the U.S.
Sure, sure. All right. Well, I hope. What's the longevity of this virus? Do the scientists or doctors know much about? Does it peak now and then taper off? Does it continue? Do they know much about it?
Well, the people who created it know everything about it, and that's why absolutely they have a vaccine. You see, if you create something in a laboratory, you do mm-hmm. not deliberately release it unless you have a vaccine, because you need to make sure that if it comes back your way, you're mm-hmm. ready to protect yourself. Mm-hmm. All I can tell you is that the the latest statistics show that they expect something like 75,000 people to be infected with it. Mm-hmm. Now, that was something that the World Health Organization projected about 4 days ago. Mm-hmm. It seems greatly an underestimate, because China is now reporting something like 25,000 people with it at this stage.
Wow.
So I think we're looking at many hundreds of thousands who are going to be infected. Mm-hmm. In terms of the virus, it's a very difficult one, because the person is infectious before they even know they've got it. Now, that tells you it's a biological weapon, mm-hmm. because normal virus will start off with a sore throat or something like that. You know, sure. You've got something.
Sure.
But it's designed to spread before you're aware of it, and it can take precautions. So it's a very clever piece of equipment from a political, military bargaining position. And I've no doubt that this just follows in a whole long line. Remember, it was I think it was 1992, I can't remember exactly, but President Bush quoted as saying, I think a bioweapon would be a very useful thing to have. And he's quoted that. In early 90s. So we shouldn't be surprised by this. It's just politics and pressure being used in different ways.
I see. Interesting. One thing I want to go over quickly, and I want to promote your 5G BioShield, wonderful BioShield event devices. You still have a buy one, get one free. Could you talk about a little bit about that and where people could get those from?
Sure. We originally were looking with Russian scientists into a device to defeat the new 5G and basically all electromagnetic waves that can be harmful. But the Russians were not in a position to be able to mass produce. When I say mass produce, I mean hundreds, thousands. I don't mean millions. But they just couldn't do it. So we bumped in through another contact to Professor Lakivic, who is a Serbian professor who has studied Tesla's technology for 20 years. And he got something very similar. So we looked at that, and we decided that that was the product that we wanted to promote. We don't make them, but we are promoting it because we think that all spiritual people who want to protect themselves should be able to. And so what I arranged was for every one that a Connecting Consciousness member, that's the organization I set up, purchases, they will get one free.
Mm-hmm.
So
wow.
They buy one, and they will get one which has the logo of St. George and the Dragon on it. Mm-hmm. And I like that. I was asked if I approved of that, and I said yes, because it's St. George slaying the reptilian, you see.
Oh, excellent. Excellent.
But the one that is going to be sent to later date free to that person will actually have my own logo on it. Connecting Consciousness, my organization, has its own infinity symbol logo, which was created by a member of my team. Mm-hmm. And that will be laser etched onto the stick. So the first one you'll get is the standard one, but the second one you'll get will have a Connecting Consciousness logo. How do you get it? Well, you go onto my website, which is simonparks.org, and you sign up. You see, you have to be a member of Connecting Consciousness. The only people who can buy these and get this buy one get one free have to be a member of Connecting Consciousness. So you join up. There's no fee. You don't pay anything. I don't charge people to be a member, so you've got nothing to lose. And then that allows you to get your stick, and it's fantastic. It's brilliant.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, let's go on to Brexit now, and that's, of course, the agreement with the European Union. But, you know, it's now the UK has left the EU on January 31st, 2020, but the sky hasn't fallen. And people is the tube still, subway train still working in London, and people are still drinking tea and having a pint?
Well, Project Fear, as we called it, obviously didn't come to anything. There were people who were absolutely desperate to stop Great Britain leaving the European experiment. But the British people had just had a bellyful of it. They just had enough. We've been in it for many, many years. And frankly, British people, I think, are a bit like American people. They don't actually like to be told what to do. Sure. And certainly they don't like to be told what to do by somebody who isn't part of their community. It is a European government which pushes its laws onto Britain. So finally, after a lot of political soul searching, I was a very big majority, and we're now left. And yes, things are hopeful, because we know that we can do a really good deal with the United States. We can do a good deal with Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and places like India, for heaven's sake, mm-hmm. who are not part of the European Union. We can do a deal with them. So I think there are a lot of European countries now who are, I don't like the word jealous, but they're probably looking at it and thinking, as you said, Ted, well, the sky didn't fall in on their heads.
Right.
Maybe that's the way to go.
Right. Right. That's amazing. That's amazing. Do you think other countries will leave the EU, for example, maybe France? I know there's been, the funny thing about France is that we hear almost nothing about the riots and turmoil that's been going on in France. And the EU, what have you heard over there? You're a lot closer to France than we are here.
Well, I think your first question is very interesting, because at the moment there's only a slight interest in other countries leaving. But now that Britain is out, all the money that Britain paid in the other countries have got to increase their contribution. So let's wait when the next round of budget comes up, and places like France and Italy have to put in something like 5% more than they were doing. This is when complaints will start to occur, and the country to watch is Italy. Italy is the country to watch, because the Greeks can't do anything, because they're owned now by the European Central Bank. They've had so many loans. But Italy is very anti-Europe. So that's the country to watch. France and Germany basically rule the European government. So they're unlikely to go. The demonstrations, you're quite right, are more about the fact that their leader, a guy called Macron, is an ex-banker. And let's face it, an ex-banker doesn't really understand the ordinary man and woman in the street. It would be easier if Macron had been a self-made man or a businessman. President Trump's a businessman. As a businessman, what that means is a businessman or a businesswoman, for that matter, have built a company up. They employ people. They run a company. They understand business. But if you're a banker, all you do is taking money off people, moving it around a little bit, and then running for cover when things go wrong. So, you know, a banker probably is the worst person you can have as a president, and that's exactly what the French have got.
Interesting. How long? I know this is a loaded question, and it depends upon people's free will, Simon. But how long do you think he will be eventually forced out of office, and how much time do you think he's got left?
I think there are two people who are a bit nervous. One is the guy in Canada, Trudeau.
Oh, yeah, right.
He's on very, very, as we say in Great Britain, a sticky wicket, which means that he's not very secure. The French guy is a bit more secure simply because there isn't anyone in an obvious position to replace him. The difficulty with Canada is you have an English-speaking group and a French-speaking group, and the cultures are remarkably different. But, you know, you cannot, as a leader, be rude about a president. It doesn't matter whether you like that United States president or not. You can't publicly be rude about a president, because what that does is it makes every other leader, world leader, say to themselves, I can't trust that man, I can't talk to him because he talks behind my back. So what that guy in Canada's done is it's absolutely destroyed any trust that anybody could have had in him. So Trudeau is the one that's in a very, very difficult position. Macron probably will get away with it, I think.
Of course, in Olympia, Seattle, where my station's located, Simon, we're close to Canada, and we do get quite a bit of Canadian news. And I know from firsthand experience with my friends up in Vancouver, Canada, they're not happy with Trudeau because he campaigned as a liberal, an open-minded gentleman who would do good things for Canada, but he's often gone along with the cabal and done things to hurt the Canadian people. So, and from my impression anyway, that there's a movement, a groundswell of movement, that unhappiness of people will eventually be transformed into getting him out. I hope they can find someone they're more happy with.
Well, he doesn't have a majority in his parliament, in his house. He doesn't have that majority. So, you know, at least with President Trump, he's got a majority in the Senate. Right. Although he doesn't have the House. So that's okay. You see, you've got 50% behind you. That's okay. But Trudeau doesn't have that. Every vote has to be fought for. So he's in a very difficult... And I agree. I think it will need something for the public to get behind.
Yeah.
He's not a very nice person, full stop.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think most Canadians would certainly agree with you. From what we know of him, it's too bad he's not as good a leader as his father was. I don't know if you received my pictures or not, Simon. I know you've been busy today, but we visited a museum here earlier today that has hybrid. It looks like hybrid human extraterrestrial skulls. The skulls are all kind of like a balloon shape in the back. The eyes are very wide open in the front. Have you ever dealt with the issue of hybrid human extraterrestrials with skulls like that, Simon?
I haven't seen the pictures. I will look later, but okay. I am familiar with what you're referring to, Ted.
Sure.
This is a particular group who were only active in what today we would call Egypt, the Giza Plateau, that area, although it is likely that they have come from Sumeria, less likely Babylon. Mm-hmm. Whether they can connect directly to what we would call the Anunnaki, that I'm not sure of. Mm-hmm. But I think that this was one of the first groups that were hybridized. In other words, right. there was no effort to try to make them look like the indigenous population. They weren't at that level. They couldn't. So what they did was they said that the brain, if we take an organic brain from Earth, the standard size just isn't capable. So therefore, we do have to have a larger shape. Right. And I think that this probably made it down to about 2,000 or 3,000 years BC.
Right.
And then, for some reason, the line was completely extinguished. And I don't actually know why the line was extinguished.
The rumor, the things that I've heard here, is that the local Indians realized that they were a threat to the planet, humanity, and they came in and killed them all off. That's at least that's the story at the museum. I know that.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah,
it would make sense. Mm-hmm. Because there would only have been proportionally a very small group of these, right. Maybe 100, 150. That's all. So you know, if they lost the control of the populace,
right,
then it wouldn't be such a difficult job. Because the other thing is that by that time, the technology that they had de-evolved. In other words, the technology that they first had was no longer on the planet. So they were very limited in what they could do. And so I should think, yes, if a few thousand people turned on them, it was over very quickly.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yesterday, we had quite an experience, or day before. We rented a taxi and drove all the way down to the Nazca Lines, which is a couple hours south of here. I don't think the driver really... He did a great job of driving, but they didn't seem to pay much attention to the speed limit laws. But we got down there quickly and back. He went down there flying down in his own little flying saucer on the highway. And if you don't mind, Tom and Dee, they rented a plane yesterday and flew over the Nazca Lines. And one of the figures, yeah, it was amazing. One of the figures, Simon, was an alien with big eyes who looked like a gray. Could you briefly, Tom, could you explain to my audience and Simon what you saw?
Well, sure. I mean, we've all seen pictures of Nazca, the figures in the whole Nazca plane. And there are different figures of animals, of spiders, of hummingbirds, other creatures, a tree, and so forth, that are quite clear from several thousand feet that you would never be able to recognize if you were at ground level. And there's also many runways that seem to go in all direction, some of them actually crossing over figures that may have been previously dug. But these very distinct runways, and they look like they're just going in every possible direction. And I had heard, and there was also I had read that they may actually converge on the other side of the Earth in Angkor Wat, which I'm not 100% sure of, but I've heard that, as well as they possibly have direction towards pyramids in other parts of the world. So that's very interesting because it really looks like a big mishmash. But there was one figure that is clearly an alien figure that looks like a gray with big eyes, you know, a round head, and it's waving, and it's so distinct that there's no question that, you know, this is the traditional figure of an alien as we would recognize them. I know there's possibly many different types, but it's so obvious from an elevation that there's this waving alien, you know, with large eyes, you know, large round head, and the figure could be, you know, several hundred feet tall, even though you wouldn't recognize that from the ground, only from an elevation. And it's so distinct and so profound to see that. It was quite the experience.
Yeah, yeah. Well, one thing I wanted to share with you too, Simon, is that there's an archaeological exhibit south of Nazca where these lines are. And it's what, about an hour south, something like that? Anyway,
it's way out in the desert.
It's out in the middle of nowhere. But we asked the driver to take us there.
And they had skulls of humans, allegedly humans there, Simon, but all the skulls had no fissures in those skulls, and all the cranial sizes were huge, like they were grays, as big, bulging, like basketball-sized heads. And one mummified as well. So it was an incredible experience. But it seems to fit my theory, Simon, is that our theory is that we had these ET craft come in by Greys and maybe reptilians, and they had come in and interbred with the humans there, try to create a hybrid human ET race. And then humanity found out, the local tribes living in the area realized what was going on. They came in and killed them all off. So that's why we don't have any record of them, except we do have the skulls left.
Well, I can add to that. If we imagine that and they just left behind a sort of a skeleton force, that was the signal, because if the locals saw these craft leaving at some point and there was a mass exodus, and I think that was the signal that emboldened the locals to rise up. And one of the things that we should put in with this is the last flood, which we think was somewhere between 10,500 years ago and 12,000 years ago. And okay. I think that a number of these events are connected.
All right. Interesting. You, as always, you come up with the most interesting observations. My goodness, I hadn't thought about the flood. But that's true. That's true. And my friends, Tom and Dee, also wanted me to ask you about Planet X. Is it a threat? And what about Enlil and Enki? And will Enki return? I would love your comments on that, Simon, if you had anything you might like
sure.
to say.
Sure. It definitely is a threat. There's no doubt about it. But the question is, a threat to whom? Who is it a threat to? Is it a threat to us? Or is it a threat to the elite people who are left behind with a task of managing the Earth, but instead hijacked it and went off and did their own thing? So I think that the threat is not to ordinary mankind and humankind on this Earth, but is to that elite group who have decided that they don't need anyone else and they're going to run it their way. So it is a threat, but it's not a threat in the way that perhaps most people on the internet understand. Is it a threat in terms of impact on the Earth? No, it's not, but its potential course this time would be close enough to disturb, you know, you might get the odd volcano, you might get the odd earthquake. It's not going to wipe out the Earth, but there certainly would be some localized gravitational effects as this object came past us.
I see. Okay, well, thanks so much for addressing that. You had another post on your website, Simon, about Poseidon aircraft. A quote, at the highest level threat to start World War III, submarine activity involving Britain's fleet of nuclear-powered submarine has led the Pentagon to provide anti-submarine aircraft to Britain. Is there a threat to the UK off the shores of your country, Simon, where this is needed? What's is there more to the story?
Yes, it's not a threat to the UK, it's a threat to the world. If you think back, and there was that very interesting submarine issue with American and a Russian submarine, and the
right.
Israelis seem to be connected with that.
Right.
there is a viewpoint that a cabalistic organization could get hold of a nuclear weapon, have a submarine, and they put it off the coast of a country, detonate it, and then you would have a massive wave which would come in and, you know, wipe out part of your country, just as happened to Japan, although that was a reactor that exploded.
Right.
Now, the best way to make sure that your own submarines aren't hijacked is to keep an eye on them, and America's provided 9 of these rather specialized aircraft, but they're also armed with torpedoes and depth charges. So in other words, if they spot a submarine that's going rogue, then they have the facility now to try and take it out. So this is nothing to do with watching the Russians. It's got nothing to do with NATO maneuvers. maneuvers or exercises. That's what the public will be told, of course. It's everything to do with ensuring that Great Britain's nuclear submarine fleet is not turned for wrong purposes.
Oh, fascinating, fascinating. Have there been attempts in the past where people or governments have tried to hijack a nuclear submarine off the coast of the UK?
Well, the interesting thing is that British nuclear submarines can't take action without the clarification from Washington. And they deny that, but that is a fact. You know, no British submarine can do anything drastic without the okay from America. That's the way it is. Mm-hmm. But it is possible through mind control for a member of the crew to be temporarily taken over and to try and sabotage the submarine or do something like that.
I see.
Try and hold someone to hostage. So Britain did not have a credible anti-submarine from the air defense. We used to have, but they got very old. They were called Nimrod aircraft, anti-submarine warfare aircraft. And they were just, what happened with those aircraft? They were standard Comet passenger jets, which by the time they put all the electronics in it, the heat that they were generating was so much that the machines weren't working anymore. So the Americans don't do anything for free. It did cost the British $3 billion, wow. But it was $3 billion well spent. So Britain mm-hmm. has provided $3 billion, and America then given 9 of these craft, which will keep Britain safe from any blackmail attempts from a cabalistic group.
I've been told many times by many people, as well as my spirit friends on the other side, Simon, that the negatives on this planet, the cabal, if you will, have actually lost the war, but they still continue to try, and they're getting desperate. Is this part of that desperateness, that they're trying to do anything they can to, I don't know, conjure up maybe a third world war or cause problems?
I think the thing is that 10 years ago, 5 years ago, where they didn't feel so desperate, they were playing a much wider game. But now, with so many avenues closed off, their corridor of action is very narrow. So they're doing things or trying to do things that are huge simply because they don't have the options. So whilst it is abhorrent and absolutely crazy to imagine that anybody could want to do something like that, I'm afraid there are some very crazy people mm-hmm. in these high positions. They are insane. It's hard to understand it, but they are, because they believe it's not a religion as we understand it, but it's a sort of a law, an elite club, an elite contract that these people have made, and they actually think that this is the way to bring salvation. And very dangerous people, because they can't be you can't logically discuss with them.
Is it a little bit like looking at a twisted view of the Bible, where Armageddon is coming, and that's what their duty is to destroy the world?
Well, they're not out to destroy the world; they're out to destroy most of the world.
Okay.
And so that, you know, they got their little bit of paradise for themselves. But yes. Most people who understand the Bible understand that if somebody wants to do it, then it's a negative person. But there is a small, and they are very small, group of people that think they are the ones tasked with bringing about this final act. But the good thing is that there are very, very few people now who are buying into that. And so the element of control is very limited. What they'll do, I don't want to go on too much on this, but
sure.
What they'll do is they have an agenda, and they will try and find another organization that has an agenda and try and hook theirs onto it. Let's say, for instance, Israel wants to do a spying mission, and there's nothing wrong in that because all countries are spying all the time. Mm-hmm. So let's say Israel wants to do a spying mission, and what these people will do is try and wrap up whatever they want with the, I could say legitimate, but with the regular mission that Israel will do, and they'll try and bring something about like that.
Interesting. We've got about 5 or 10 minutes left, Simon. I want to give you the rest of the time to feel free to discuss any topics you like.
Oh, thank you. Well, let's just quickly go to the U.S. then. A very interesting time now. We expect the president to be acquitted tomorrow. The Democrats could start the process all over again. They really could.
Well,
they could start the impeachment process again, and there are people who want that to happen. I don't think they will, simply because the majority realize that's a terrible vote loser. But from the moment of acquittal, your election is on. I know it's the 3rd of November, mm-hmm. but once that acquittal is public, that's it. It's going to be a very, very interesting time in the United States, mm-hmm. Because election will have started very early.
Mm-hmm. Wow, amazing. It's an interesting time to be alive, certainly. But I know that things are getting better around the world. I know we have challenges, but all of my spirit friends on the other side say that we have a very bright and beautiful future ahead of us, in spite of these challenges.
Ted, what's happening is that the consciousness of humanity has outstripped the ability of evil people to hold it down.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means in a practical sense is that people now are seeing the truth, mm-hmm. and they are making a choice. And 10 years ago, people didn't see the truth in anything like the numbers they are now. So it's a very exciting time because people are beginning to set their own agenda. That's mm-hmm. what's exciting.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think this is underreported, of course, in the mass media, but there's been an outpouring of demonstrations around the world for greater freedom and greater and more economic freedom and political freedom for people around the world. You've seen that in China, in Mexico, and many other countries around the world, even when it's not reported.
Yes, and surprisingly, even in countries that you would think had a fairly free system. So it's not just in the countries that you think could have a problem.
Right. In the U.S. too, I think, and more people are speaking out about the world, and they want it to make this world to be made a better place, Simon. And but you don't hear much about it in the main media. What's the climate like in London and in England? Are people protesting there as well?
Well, the thing was, London's very difficult because people in London believed that they wanted to be part of Europe because they thought that if they weren't, they were being racist. That's the bottom line.
Hmm.
But London is a city of 8 million people, but is not the be-all and end-all when you've got all of the rest of the country, the 60 million people in our small island.
Mm-hmm.
And when the vote came, whether people wanted to, you know, leave or stay or vote for a government that would take us out of Europe, London found it was almost on its own. In fact, the Scottish people and London voted to remain, and every other part of Great Britain voted to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we've got is a very hot political elite in London who want to suck up to Europe. But all of the people who put them in those positions, the ordinary men and women, don't want that. So you've got a real difference now between the opposition, we call them the Labour Party, the opposition politicians who wanted to be in Europe lost a load of support because their vision was not the vision of the people. And this is what's happening, Ted, that unless a government is able to act on and understand the requirements of its people and its the vision of the people and put that into practice, the people no longer will just accept it. The people will get rid of them, and that's what's happening.
Yeah, wow, that's amazing. Two stories that I had heard from this side of the pond, Simon, about what's going on in the UK is that farmers in Britain, for example, when they raised apples, were told by the EU headquarters in Brussels that their apples could only be a certain diameter or a certain color. And that infuriated many fruit growers in Britain because, of course, apples will be apples and they'll grow different colors and sizes. The other thing, too, another rumor I heard, I don't know if it's true or not, but was that the people in Brussels told the people in England when they could make their tea and how much water they could use and how much electricity they could use to make tea. I mean, it got to the point where it got to be ridiculous with the kinds of regulations coming out of the EU.
Right. The first one is true. The European Union absolutely set size and standard and color of apple. They did it for everything, which absolutely destroyed all of the husband and wife, brother and sister, uncles, aunties, little family farmers, little groups of people couldn't compete with these massive polytunnels in other countries. So it destroyed the local initiative from this country. And you're right, it's one of the real reasons that we don't like Europe. The tea, it wasn't an order, it was a suggestion. But the very fact, and hey, you know what the British are like. I mean, British and tea, you can't get more British than that. So if we're having a foreigner telling us how to make a cup of tea, so the Europeans got to a point where they thought they'd got control of Britain. Here's the key. They thought they'd got control of it. And it's a bit like the American War of Independence. King George thought he'd got the American people where he wanted them. He thought he controlled it, and of course he didn't. And in the same way, Europe realized, too late for them, that actually they'd lost control of the minds and hearts of the British people. That's it. I mean, there was a big thing about chocolate. They were trying to, Europe was saying to us, yours is not chocolate. You're calling it chocolate. It's not chocolate because it doesn't contain this, this, and this. I mean, how dare a foreign country tell another country you can't label your food, you can't, you know, call it a sausage or you can't call it chocolate? I mean, you just don't do that. And that's just arrogance, the arrogance they got to. And they paid the price for it now.
Right. Or you can't tell people what an apple is.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Same thing.
Exactly.
Same thing. Or how many cups of tea they can have.
Yeah. But it does show you the mindset these people are in, that they believed that they were demigods. That's actually what's happened.
Wow. That's
because they are locked away in Brussels, this beautiful, beautiful, foreign, expensive building, and they're totally out of touch.
Yeah, right.
With the reality of it.
I couldn't agree with you more, Simon. I have a quick question from Tom, member of my group here.
Yeah. Hi, Simon. What do you think Brexit, what effect will it have on the Republic of Ireland now that it's still part of the EU, with the border there and the farmers with their, you know, because I know they import a lot into the UK. How's that going to affect them? What are your thoughts on that?
The real issue for the European Union was products coming through from the north of the island into the south and vice versa, and not paying taxes. That's all it was about. It was literally about Europe not getting the money. The south of the island, the Republic, is very pro European Union simply because they get out more than they put in, and I don't blame them. If a country gets out more than it puts in, of course it's going to do it. So the issue wasn't really so much about undercutting or undermining the farming part of the south. It was more about goods being sold to Europe that weren't coming through the tax system. But I think that the time is coming when the south of Ireland and the north of Ireland will at some point be unified. I think that's going to come in my lifetime. I think that the barrier is going to officially come down, and it doesn't matter then. It makes a complete mockery of all this ridiculousness.
Yeah.
You have an island that's been divided through political reasons, not religious reasons. It's nonsense. It's political reasons, which then became religious. Mm-hmm. And because of the very strong Freemasonry representation through the Orange Order in the north of the island. No British government was ever prepared to be even-handed with both sides. There was always this pressure because of this elite status in the north. But people have children, children grow up, and they vote. And it was obvious 20 years ago that at some point the people in the south will outnumber the people in the north, and by just a democratic process it will become one country.
Wow.
So this is arguing for no purpose. It's ridiculous.
Wow, thank you so much for sharing that viewpoint. Simon, this hour has gone by so fast, and we've had so much fun, but we've got another minute, and I just wanted to help you wrap up your wonderful interview today.
Listen, you guys, have a fantastic time. You have a wonderful opportunity. It's a wonderful part of the world. I've not been there, but I've seen books, and I've seen the videos, and I've read the history. It's full of the most exciting history that's hidden from the Western world in the true sense of it. So make the most of it. Have a lovely time. Listen, Ted, God bless to you, and God bless to the audience, and have a chat with me when you get back home.
Okay, I sure will, Simon. It's so good to talk to you. Have a wonderful day. Please say hello to your cats and dogs for us.
I will.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. Cheers.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.